good morning. If there's one thing I learned yesterday, it's that time moves faster in this room than anywhere else. So we're going to get started really quickly today. I am honored to be able to speak to you about a subject that I am really quite passionate about, and money and finances is something that we don't often speak about in ladies' classes, so why should we study about it now? The basis for our lesson today comes from 1 Corinthians chapter 9, and we know that we're running a spiritual race, and we're searching for and striving for an incorruptible crown. And Paul tells us in verse 25 that everyone who is competing for this prize is temperate or disciplined in all things. As we look at our lives and think about the areas where we should be striving and obtaining discipline, finances is one of those areas where struggles abound. And unfortunately, it's not one of those things that we can look out and say, oh, the world, they just don't know how to manage their money. That's true. Or our denominational friends, they just don't do. But no, statistics tell us, and just talking to people tell us, that we in the church are failing to be disciplined in our finances. My goal this morning is for us to really look at our attitudes and actions towards our finances so that we may become the disciplined stewards that God has called us to be. Maybe you are thinking, oh, I don't handle the finances in my home. My husband does all of that. Maybe he talks to the bank. Maybe he makes the investment decisions. But we as women do the majority of the shopping in our home, don't we? And by doing that each day, we are making the decisions of where the money is spent. The Bible talks a lot about money. Jesus probably spoke more about money than any other thing except for the kingdom of heaven. Over a third of his parables deal in finances in some manner. Why is that? Because we, a people, from the beginning of time, have been searching after money. It's something that transcends culture, class, race, and more importantly than that, money, I believe, is directly tied to heart issues. There are few more accurate barometers of our heart than money. Have we ever thought about that? We're going to get back to our hearts in just a second, but allow me to introduce to you the average American family. The average American family makes $43,000 a year. They have $2,200 in credit card debt. Over half of Americans, or at least half of Americans, have no retirement savings at all. And total average household debt for America, for each American family, is $117,951. What do you think about that? Is that what you expected to see? Does that surprise you? How do you measure up? I'm certainly not suggesting that this is the standard by which we should measure our finances. On the contrary, I believe that we as Christian women, as preacher's wives, for those of you that are preacher's wives in here, we should be striving to be disciplined in this area such that we're paying off debt if we have debt. We should be striving to be disciplined in our savings and be disciplined in teaching others about how to be good stewards. This morning what I have for you is an acrostic. We're going to talk about those areas where we can be work to grow to be disciplined. We have an acrostic for the word cross. And we're going to jump right in. So I hope you grab a pen and paper and get some notes. C this morning is for consider your plan. Open your Bibles to Proverbs 31. We could do an entire lesson on Proverbs 31 woman just as it pertains to finances and the way she handled her money. But we're just going to look at one verse really quickly. It's not a good lady's class. It's not from Proverbs 31, right? Proverbs 31 and verse 16. That passage says, she considers a field and buys it, and from her profits she plants a vineyard. If I'm just casually reading that verse, I would say, okay, you know, she's going shopping for some land so that she can plant a vineyard. But that word considers there, she considers her field, has such a rich definition that I think it warrants some time for us to look at. My friend, dictionary.com, tells us that considered is to think carefully about, especially in order to make a decision, contemplate, reflect on, make an allowance for, and to regard with respect. How carefully are you considering your finances and your family? Are we paying attention to and are we making allowance for the big purchases in our home? Are you regarding with respect the blessings that God has blessed us with to be stewards of, you know, regardless of how big or how small? A look at the surrounding verses indicates that that's exactly how the Proverbs 39 woman handled the money in her home. And we could easily illustrate this principle of consideration from Luke chapter 14 also. This is where Jesus talks about counting the cost and considering and planning before we build a tower to ensure that we have enough to build it. The retail business thrives on our lack of consideration, don't they? Yes. They prey on us with their elaborate displays to end cap. The big box stores have salesmen trying to upsell, and the waiters and waitresses are also wanting us to, you know, make impulse buys, adding on that dessert or adding on that appetizers, and all of those are great. But certainly something that they prey on. If you find yourself wanting to be better in planning in your budget and in your household finances, let's consider a couple of ways to get started. Number one, create a budget. And I know that sounds basic and simple, but creating a budget is really the basis for being able to start discussions in your family and to really track where you're spending and to get that consideration and stewardship going. If you've never had a budget before, here's some places that you can go. Mint.com, M-I-N-T, that's the money mint. Mint.com is a great free website that has all sorts of budgeting tools. You could use Excel, you could use Quicken or MS Money that comes on most computers standard these days. Many online banking tools are free for you out there for whatever bank that you use. Or you could just use an old-fashioned piece of paper. Ultimately, what we're trying to do here is examine our needs versus wants, as Brother Pollard mentioned last night. Our needs versus our wants. And in Matthew chapter 6, as we talked about last night, the worry that Jesus tells us not to worry about our food and our clothing. He doesn't tell us not to worry about that cell phone data plan or do not worry about your Dish Network package, you know. Those are some things that we may consider as necessities, but how many is we really need to look at what is a necessity versus a luxury when we're creating our budget. Perhaps you have a budget and you still find your way wanting to consider and do some better planning and consideration of where you're spending your money. Consider these tips. If you find yourself impulse buying is perhaps, you know, spending a little more money each week or each month and you have the impulse buys, try giving yourself an allowance for some spending money. If you have when you get your paycheck each month or every 2 weeks, pull $20 cash or $30 cash out. That's your money. That's your play money, your allowance to be able to spend on whatever it is you want. Maybe it's a pedicure. Maybe it's something there at the end cap of the aisle that you want to try a new flavor of chips. But if that's not already in your budget, that's something that you can use and use your allowance on, and then when that allowance is gone, it's gone. And that way, it's the end for that spending. Another thing, if you find yourself having the latest and greatest syndrome, wanting to upgrade and have the newest and latest gadget, hopefully what we're doing is saving up our money first to purchase it rather than going to purchase it and hope we can pay it off later. But hopefully you're saving up your money for those big purchases. And when you get that money, a challenge would be to institute a waiting period. You have the money, and rather than running out and going to buy it right then, maybe wait 2 weeks. Really sit and think and decide, is this really where I want to spend my money? And at the end of that 2 weeks, or 6 weeks, or however long you implement it, and you're ready to go and make that purchase, great. You may decide at the end of that 2 to 6 weeks that you don't really need that anymore. And if so, maybe you've saved yourself some buyer's remorse and some money. The last tip I have for budgeting is the envelope system. And this is a great thing for maybe newlyweds or people that are really wanting to get a handle on where you're spending your money. And that's simply to cash your paycheck and divide it into envelopes, rent, groceries, gas, and you put the allotted amount of money in those envelopes for each month. And when the money is gone from those envelopes, so is your sending. As I said, these are just some really basic ways to get started for our consideration and planning. Certainly some good starting points, but this isn't the end, so let's go ahead and move on to point two. R for our acrostic is reflect on past mistakes and triumphs. We are a forgetful people, and this is not a modern phenomenon. The word in my New King James Bible, remember, is used 164 times. Why is that? Because if we would just learn from history, then we wouldn't be as likely to make mistakes. Nobody's perfect. We can apply this same principle of reflecting. The Bible is full of individuals who reflected. Solomon may be the most notable. Ecclesiastes is one big book of reflection, right, upon his life. We can reflect on where we've been in our finances. Nobody's perfect. We've all made mistakes, and some of those have longer-lasting consequences than others. Whether it's frivolous purchases that have led you to a mountain of debt, or maybe it's purchasing too much house or too much car that have led you scraping by each month, these are valuable lessons that we can learn. On the flip side of that, maybe weeks or months or years of living below your means and being able to save for that long-awaited vacation overseas. Whatever it is, we can learn from where we've been. And so that's what we're considering in this point. How did you get to where you are? Once you've identified areas, you've got a budget and you've identified areas maybe that you would like to cut back on, what are some ways that we can avoid overspending? Number one, avoid areas of temptation. When we identify sin in our lives, the Bible is very clear that we should cut ourselves off from it, James 4, verse 7. Job made covenant with his eyes that he wouldn't sin against God, and uses teachings in Matthew chapter 5 to cut off those members that cause us to stumble. I am not going so far as to say that overspending in our budget is sinful. I don't believe that it is. But cutting back is a lot like a nutritional diet, isn't it? How many of us start off strong, and then as soon as we're invited to a party with a beautiful spread of dessert, we decide, I'm going to choose just one. Maybe you've identified an area in your budget where you'd like to cut back, and maybe it's that daily trip to Starbucks. Maybe that temptation is so strong that you just need to find another route to get to work and you don't drive by Starbucks anymore. Maybe those catalogs and ads that come in the mailbox every day, or the coupons from JCPenney's is the one that we get all the time. Maybe that's a temptation where you're going out and spending money on things that you need to cut back on or you don't want anymore. Maybe you could have your husband or someone else get to the mailbox first. I try to get to the Cabela's magazine first. My husband. While we're on the area of temptation, I want to add this in really quickly. I didn't plan to talk about this, but there are several ladies in here that are maybe newlyweds or will soon to be married. One area of temptation that we find when we're newlyweds is maybe wanting to live just the way we came from our parents' house in a nice four-bedroom home. And I really want to get, this tip was passed to me, and I really want to, you know, pass this on to you. Before you have children, if both of you are working, learn to live on your husband's salary. If it's your goal to be a stay-at-home mom, and I really hope that it is, because that's the best job ever. I really hope that you'll learn to live on your husband's salary. You know, use your money, you're spending money for vacations before you have kids. Use that money to save for a down payment on a home, because then your monthly payments on a mortgage will be smaller. But just don't use that money to lock yourself into rent or mortgage payments. It is hard to get out of. If you can't afford cable on your husband's salary, maybe you don't need cable. Because it's so hard once you've built up a standard of living to come back down. Another area for reflecting on our past mistakes is don't deceive ourselves. We're warned in James chapter 1 not to deceive ourselves, and also in Galatians chapter 6, verse 7. How might we be deceived when we're reflecting and talking about our finances? Are there any coupon queens in here? I know there are some. I certainly would not go so far as to say that I'm a couponing expert. But I do try to use them whenever possible. One thing I really have to watch for myself is just buying something because I have a coupon for it. If we aren't careful, we can trick ourselves into thinking that we're saving money when we're actually not spending any less. It can become a game, a competition focused on the bottom of that receipt. You've saved X dollars with us today. we can convince ourselves that we're being frugal just because we shop at thrift stores all the while our house is piled to the brim with things that we don't need and we'll never actually use, but we got them on sale. It's just something to think about. Let's move on to, obligations without worry. When it comes to money matters, we have to talk about worry. Maybe we worry about saving for our children's college or our retirement. Maybe we worry about a mountain of debt, or maybe we worry about health insurance. That's something that's going to worry in our family. Maybe our worry is more pressing and we worry about how to get by month to month paying the bills. Jesus tells us three times in Matthew chapter 6, do not worry. And that's certainly easier said than done. But how can we grow to have a healthy concern over our finances without being worried about it? Number one, make a list. I am a list maker. I get a thrill out of scratching things off that I've accomplished. But this particular list is a list that's going to be blank. And I would venture a guess that it's going to be blank for every single one of you. This is a list of times that you've ever gone without things that you need. When I moved to Austin after graduating from college to start my first job, I was planning on attending the Southwest congregation, and my college friends would tell me, oh, you're going to move there and marry one of those young preacher boys. And I would say, I am never going to marry a preacher. And this is what you think about that today. If I really take a good evaluation about why that was that I would say those things, it has to be finance related to me. I'm a finance major, and that's the way my brain works. I wanted to be a stay-at-home mom. How can we possibly live on a preacher's salary? They don't provide anything for retirement. We're not going to have health insurance. How can we get by? And then those are the things that would go through my head. But here I am, a preacher's wife and a stay-at-home mom, and we've been blessed. And I'm not so naive to think that trials won't come, and maybe even financial trials. But hopefully when those do come, I can remember about that list that's blank, and I can remember that I've never gone without the things that I need. You can even talk to missionaries, and they would probably tell you the same thing. It's a challenging work, but the money is always there when you're striving to do what God has called you to do. Another thing, if worry gets us, test God and trust God. We're talking about meeting our obligations without worry. And the previous point was more about our physical obligations, getting the bills paid and that sort of thing. But what about our spiritual obligations? Giving to the Lord. There are those in Christian-based financial planning that say, it's okay to not give anything while you're trying to get your finances in order. If you've got a lot of debt, pay your debt off first, and then we'll see, you know, then you can start giving again. Basically, what they're saying is that the debt collector is more important than our soul collector. And that couldn't be further from the truth. God has never expected or accepted anything but our first and our best. And even if we're struggling financially, we need to remember that giving to God should be our first priority. We focus a lot about cheerful giving and having the right gratitude in 2 Corinthians chapter 9, verse 7. And that's absolutely a great focus. But I often wonder, why would the Lord have brought to our attention the widow and her two mites if he wasn't also interested in the amount we give? And I'm not talking about a specific dollar amount, but the amount that we're willing to sacrifice. So what happens when that amount that we give is perhaps become a source of worry for us? Or maybe the amount that we don't give, what happens if that's a worry for us? Two of my favorite verses, and I know that these are commonly read before giving and during the time of board supper and afterwards, but I want to read them with the idea of not worrying in mind. Bring all the tithes into the storehouse that there may be food in my house, and try me now in this, says the Lord of hosts. If I will not open for you the windows of heaven and pour out for you such a blessing that there will not be enough room to receive it. And also, Luke chapter 6, verse 38, give and it will be given unto you, good measure, pressed down, shaken together, and running over will be put in your bosom. For with the same measure that you use, it will be measured back to you. I don't know about you, but those are very comforting images to me. And it's also comforting to know that God doesn't need our money. But rather, through us giving, he's teaching us to be more like him, a giver, because He is the giver of every good and perfect gift. When the economy gets tough and we wonder how we're ever going to make it, let's remember what one wise preacher said. Giving is a reflection of our divine connection. Giving reflects how much we trust God. May we take Him at His word and test Him in our giving, not testing with a haughty spirit as some might use the word test, but purposely and prayerfully considering and giving our very first and our very best, that our trust might increase and our worries might decrease. For the sake of time, I have one more obligation without worry, and that's an emergency fund, and we're just going to talk about that really quickly. Our reliance upon God and His provision for us is paramount to not worrying. But sometimes it helps for us to have something tangible in this life. And if we have some money set aside for a rainy day that we know is there in the back of our mind, that can really go a long way to helping us not worry about our obligation. We're going to talk more about emergency fund in a minute. What a wonderful feeling it would be to live free of worry and money. It is one of the most challenging things to be disciplined about. But just think of the good works that we could put our time and effort towards if we weren't worrying about money. S, to stay with the purpose. There is a growing trend in Christendom that says you aren't a good Christian if you're not living a really frugal lifestyle, regardless if you need to live frugally or not. And they fight Matthew chapter 6, verse 19, don't lay up for yourself treasure on earth. But then there's the other end of the spectrum where materialism is a real temptation. And when we start to save and accumulate things, we diminish our reliance upon God. So which is it? Where do we land? And where should we be? It's absolutely true from Matthew chapter 6 that we shouldn't lay up for ourselves treasures on heaven. That is to become so attached to the things of this world. Sorry, did I say on heaven? I meant earth. That is to become so attached to the things of this world that they overshadow our need and reliance upon God. But it is also absolutely true that the Bible is full of principles about saving and storing up for a rainy day. Joseph may be the most obvious. Living in Egypt, he was told to save up in the days of plenty so that he would be prepared for the famine. Also the ant in chapter 6 and chapter 30 of Proverbs. We talk about that ant being a sluggard, but he stores up his food in the summer, preparing for the winter. Proverbs 30, verse 24 and 25 says, the ant is small on earth, but is exceedingly wise. The ants are not as strong as people, but they prepare their food for the summer. As with a lot of things in our Christian walk, we have to strike a balance. So we need to live in that spot somewhere between confidence in God's provision and financial self-control. It's a balance. If we're only relying on God's provision, then we may be tempted to sit back and say, all right, God, take care of me. I'm not going to do anything, but come on. And on the other hand, we're just taking care of ourselves, and we lose our reliance on God. So we have to have a balance between those two things. One of the best ways, I think, for us to remember that balance is to remember where our blessings come from. Open your Bibles to 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 12. We can read that together. 1 Chronicles chapter 29, verse 12. I don't have that up on the slide. It says, both riches and honor come from you, and you reign over all. In your hand is power and might, and in your hand it is to make grace and to give strength to all. Deuteronomy chapter 8 and verse 18 is also a reminder from Moses to the children of Israel that says, remember the Lord your God, for it is He who gives you power to get wealth. Before we go any further, for as much emphasis as I am and will put on saving, because I think saving is really important, serving God is our absolute priority. Not all Christians are blessed financially. And if we don't have the means to be able to set things aside for the future, but if we're living within our means and providing the needs for our family and serving God, then that is living in an abundant life. But, as we talked about with the average family, how many of us could probably take a serious look at where we're spending money and save for a rainy day and save for our needs for the future? Probably a lot more of us are in that category. I put together a pecking order, a list of the greatest importance of where to put your money first. It's where I would put my money first. There are plenty of investment advisors out there that would give you a similar list of the importance of where to save money first when you can't save it in all categories. But my list is based on this. It's geared towards preachers and their families, as you'll, I think you'll see, but it's relevant for everyone. And it's based on two things. Number one, it's based on the assumption that you're first giving of your best to the Lord, and as your income increases, so is your giving. It's also based on that you have your debt under control before you can start really saving money that needs to be under control. A little later at the end of class, I'm not going to touch about on debt and how to get out of debt right now. I have a list of reading materials if you're interested in that. I'm not here to reinvent the wheel, and there are plenty of folks out there that have written great books on that subject. So where would I put my money first? Number one, as we just discussed, an emergency fund. An emergency fund would start off with $1,000 and eventually work your way up to 3 to 6 months of living expenses. Why the 3 to 6 months, did they say? It's originally geared because if your husband were to lose his job suddenly, you're able to pay for your living expenses and you're able to find another job. Fortunately, if you're in the ministry, even if your husband is asked to leave abruptly, most churches aren't going to kick you out the door destitute until you find another job. That's certainly a blessing. This account should not be linked to a check card. It should be a separate savings account, something that's not easily accessible but that's liquid and can be accessed quickly if needed. It's a good for your husband, for you and your husband, to sit down and discuss what you're likely to spend. Again, having a budget is of utmost importance, I think, for communication between you and your husband as a way to talk about where you're spending your money. We know that finances is one of the top three reasons for financial marital turmoil, and so increased communication in this area has to be a good thing. Two categories for you and your husband to discuss of what can you spend your money on in your emergency fund. Number one, it needs to be unexpected, like medical bills or car repairs, not Christmas gifts. And expensive, things that just don't go in your budget or that you don't, if you have a little extra room in your budget, things that you just can't cover there. It takes discipline to not dip into that emergency fund at any time you need some extra money. It really does, because that's what we're working on, right? We're working on our discipline. Number two, emergency funds, then a Roth IRA, an individual retirement account. Once you have your emergency fund funded, this is where you would go next to save that extra money. A Roth IRA, there are few congregations that have any sort of 401k or retirement support, and that's fine. And that certainly puts us a leg behind those that work in corporate America, but there are still plenty of things for preaching families that we can do to save for our retirement, and all the while maybe we can be thankful that we're not working in the environment of corporate America. It's a challenging location. I've worked there for many years, and so I can say that. Fortunately, let's see, where am I at? Here we go. The Roth IRA, the benefit of it versus any other retirement vehicle is that it grows tax-free. You pay taxes on the money that you put in it, but anything that grows, you can pull out tax-free when you're 59 and a half or later. That's a huge benefit because most of us are paying higher taxes, are paying taxes now, and we're still going to have to be paying taxes when we are significantly reduced for our income. So any less taxes that we can pay when we're a retirement age is a good thing. One of the qualifications for being able to use a Roth IRA, each individual in your home can have one, you and your spouse can have one, you can even open one for your children if you want to. The family income cannot exceed $164,000 annually, but you can contribute up to $5,000, and if you're over 50, you can contribute $6,000 a year to it, and that can grow really quickly, and you can invest it wherever you choose. It can be, you know, stocks, bonds, mutual funds. Again, I'm not going to be talking about investment so much. It's on our recommended reading list. Any questions before we keep going? Yes, ma'am.
If you're having to pay more taxes now, and you put in money into an IRA that you don't pay tax, you get tax deduction for now,
right.
and you know your preacher's wife and, you know, preacher's family, and you're not going to have a great deal of income when you retire, if you ever do.
Right.
And, which my husband says he's going to preach till he dies in the way of this. Anyway, to me, it seemed like the wise thing to put it in an IRA that you got tax deductions for now, so you don't have to pay taxes on it now, because you're not going to have to pay taxes on it then, but your income's not going to be nearly as much then as it is now.
That is a consideration to take under. It actually is. But one thing to also consider is the administration that of our government, and where have taxes been going? They get higher and higher, right? So something to consider. What do you think? And that's a totally a judgment call. Where do you believe that your tax rate will be based on whatever, you know, presidential administration or Congress that we have?
Well, we're already not very paying much in taxes now.
And so,
I figure when our income is down to four for what it is now.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly something to consider. Yes, ma'am.
If you can only afford to put money in one, would you recommend only one spouse having a Roth IRA then?
It will grow faster if you put it
in. Because if that's outside, it goes to the other.
It will grow faster if you have it in one location.
Right.
Yeah. And then that's fine. Any other questions? Comments? All right. Next, 2.5. Ignore that. 2.5 piggy bank. Andy and I have a piggy bank. It's a separate savings account. It's just a separate savings account in the bank, but it's for places for us to save for things like fun things, so like vacations or camera lenses for me or Andy's current heart's desire of a green egg. Do you guys know what that is? I didn't know what that was. It's a barbecue kit. Fancy one. One of the benefits of working in ministry is gospel meetings, lectureships, preacher's workshops, where maybe there's a little extra income aside from what you get in your normal budget. And I think what I would recommend for you to put that money for your piggy bank, for something fun. And you may be wondering why I numbered it 2.5, and it's because that I'm well aware that we may not all have enough money to first fund our emergency fund, and then save for retirement for $5,000, and then save for vacations and fun things. But the adage goes that all work and no play makes Johnny a dull boy or something like that, right? And so if we're struggling to save and we're only saving for retirement first, then that doesn't leave anything else for us to have fun on. And it's so important, I think, especially when we're dealing with troubles and the burdens of others in the church, to take some time off as a family and to have hobbies where you can really get away and kind of let your mind relax. And so that's what I recommend for the piggy bank, for to put vacations, save for vacations and hobbies. But if you have to choose between saving for retirement and saving for fun things, split it in half. Put half of the money that you were able to save towards retirement. If it's only $2,000, put $1,000 for retirement, and you can save $1,000 or less towards your vacations and things. And that way, you're living happily, and you can better serve others when you're having fun and looking happily. I say don't split any more than retirement, any more than half. Go into the piggy bank, because retirement savings is important, and I know that preachers say that they're never going to retire, but there will be a time when health or maybe family circumstances comes that we aren't able to maybe take a full-time work, and it's good to have some money to set apart for retirement. Any questions before we go on to the next one? We've got to move. College funds. You may ask, why is it that this is so far down on the list? My children are my most important things, and I want to put them first in my life. But quite simply, there aren't scholarships and student loans for our retirement. College can be paid for, and there are other avenues for ways to pay for college. Really quickly, there are a lot of ways to save for college. There's the prepaid plans, and there's all kinds of different options for you. But I think probably the very best option for the majority of people is a 529 account. And again, it grows tax-free. It is for money only related to education. So it's run by each state. Each state has a plan, but you can invest in any state. If you live in Texas, you get a discount for investing in the state plan, but you can also go over to Utah, which actually is probably the very best one. You just kind of have to look at the cost-benefit ratio of how much discount you're getting in your home state versus the amount of fees that you have to pay for this plan. As I said, again, it's money to only be used for education expenses, and so that's one risk of a 529 account, as opposed to maybe just saving it in a savings account somewhere. But the fact that it's growing tax-free, and also the fact that it can be transferred between children. Maybe your child grows up and they don't want to go to college. And you said, but I've got money for education and that's all I can use it on if it's tax-free. Well, transfer it to another child. Or you can still use the money in there if none of your children are going to go to college, or if maybe financial or family circumstances come up that you don't want to pay for your child's college. You can pull that money out and spend it on anything, and you'll just have to pay taxes on it. But there are no any other kind of ramifications for pulling that money out. Questions? I know I'm fast on that, but we've got to keep going. The last one I have is building equity. If you've saved for your emergency fund, if you've saved for your retirement, you've got some money in the piggy bank for a nice family vacation, and then you've got your kids taken care of. There may not be any of us that can get to this category of building equity, but I just wanted to touch on it quickly. Parsonages are a blessing for preachers' families, but one of the disadvantages of them is the ability to build equity. And I just want to say that you can still build equity even if you don't own something. And it takes discipline, and we're working on discipline, and disciplining to pay yourself a mortgage. If you don't own a home, you're also not paying property taxes, you're not paying for homeowners insurance and all of the other fees and closing costs and all the other fees that are associated with that can kind of diminish your equity. If you just pay yourself and set it aside, $400 a month, $100 a month, you know, closer to what a real mortgage payment would be, maybe $600 or $800 a month or $1,000 a month, at the end of whatever time you set and you're living in a parsonage, you've got this nest egg set up that can be go towards a great down payment on a home. And that will open up options for you to maybe not to maybe take a work that doesn't provide a parsonage. If you don't have that, maybe you would be limited to only taking the work that provides a home. But if you've got an estate set up, you can go and you have a down payment on a home, and that can help you have much more affordable monthly payments for owning a home, and you've got equity built up just the same as anybody else would. So there's no doubt that saving takes discipline. That's paying yourself a mortgage and saving for a down payment without added expenses. And our last one, stewardship is learned. I know we've talked a lot about these top 4 points have been more about individually, how can we be more disciplined in our money and our finances. And I really hope that maybe all of you in the room can sit here and say, yep, I agree with that. Or maybe if you've taken a completely different approach to your finances and you are in a good position and you're living, you know, as a good steward, how are you using that information and that knowledge to help others? It's a topic that we don't address often in depth is money and finances, and that's because it's a private topic, it's a personal topic. Sex is also one of those taboo topics that we don't talk about a lot, but we know that our children are going to learn from somebody about it, and if we aren't teaching them, then they're going to learn from somebody else, and maybe some other consequences that we don't want. None of us got to where we are overnight in our finances, but how many of us would maybe be in a different place if we had somebody along the way coaching us and helping us to be better stewards? Maybe you just didn't listen to that advice, but that's a whole other issue, and we're not going to talk about that. I'm reminded of Isaiah in chapter 28 of Isaiah. He was teaching the people that were being rebellious towards God, and they started saying to him, Isaiah, you're treating us like children. And that's exactly what Isaiah was doing. He said, for precept, this is verse 10 of Isaiah chapter 28, for precept must be upon precept, precept upon precept, line upon line, here a little, there a little. And that's how we learn about many things in life, isn't it? Little by little by little, and that's how we should be teaching our children in all of God's ways, including stewardship. So with that, what are our children learning about watching us? What are they learning about money from seeing us and the way we use money? Do they have an age-appropriate understanding of where money comes from and its value? or do they just think that money is plastic? I'm not against credit cards in any way, but they do take discipline to use to pay off each month. And there's some really great benefits to credit cards. If you are paying them off each month, you can use some save points and you get cash back and all kinds of things. What about our teenagers? Most of our teenagers have income from either allowances or a job that they have. Are they being trained to first put their first fruit and give to the Lord on the first day of the week? Or does the collection plate in your congregation pass through 3 rows of teenagers completely empty? What about our young men and women that are heading off to college? We teach and we talk and we pray about all of the things that they're going to encounter on a college campus, sex, drugs, evolution, and we should absolutely be doing that. It's of utmost importance that we're training our children and warning them how they are, what they're going to encounter and preparing them for that. When it comes to finances, what about how are we training them to be able to live alone on a budget? Have they had any experience in that growing up under our roof, or are they likely to blow through their semester allotted worth of finances in the first 2 months? I can really get on the soapbox about the college campuses and the credit card companies. There's booth after booth after booth of them, and they're really preying on poor college students that just need money, and they offer free pizza and they offer free t-shirts. Have we warned our kids? Do they know how credit card debt that is racked up in college can really be a detriment to them for many, many, many years down through the life? It's something to think about. I say all of this to say that we are raising the next generation of people in the church, and we are training them to be disciplined and temperate in all things. If we're not being disciplined in our finances, then we're not teaching our children to be disciplined in our finances. And what can we expect from future elders of the church to be good stewards of the church? Jesus, the disciples needed Jesus to teach them how to pray. And our children need us to teach them how to be good stewards. I hope this lesson has been an encouragement to you and it helps for you. And as I said earlier, I have a list. This isn't really my purpose to do a how to get out of debt seminar, or how to invest, or how to what to put your money in, your stocks, and all of that stuff. I'm happy to answer any questions after class if you have any of those, but I do have a recommended reading list for anybody that would like to come pick one up. Please read my disclaimer on the top. Some of these are denominational books, but they have a really good lot of information. There's some books on personal finance and debt management, just some general self-discipline books and some investment books. I thank you for your attention this morning, and I want us all to remember that no matter where we are financially, that we as children of God are some of the richest families in America.